Monday evening, September the 24th, Finance Committee. Present at the start of the meeting is Alderman Fuller, Alderman Salvucci, and Alderman Gentile. There's another little function going on in town that several of the committee members are at, and I'm sure they're working their way back. So I want to hold off on 279-12 until more committee members get here as a courtesy. So, Maureen, why don't we do the forestry, because we've already visited that issue before, so we can just take a recommendation.
Sure.
So 103-12, parens 2, is on to the mayor, requesting authorization to transfer the sum of $75,000 from forestry services full-time salaries to forestry services, forestry tree serve slash tree services. This item was voted out already once by the Finance Committee at the request of the mayor's office. It was recommitted on September the 19th because the appropriation request was going to be reduced since there were two hires. So Maureen, why don't you go ahead and...
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have two people who have verbally accepted offers, and we are hoping that they will start within the next few weeks. What we would like to do is reduce this from a $75,000 transfer to a $40,000 transfer. We will still be bringing Northern in because we have more work to do right now than we had intended to at this point if we had these individuals on board to begin with. So we'll use of that $40,000, what we're going to do with it is have a two-man crew from Northern with their own equipment, because we will put our two people out in our equipment with Mark Welch, I'm sure. And so we'll have a lot of work happening in a short amount of time. It's going to cost us $220 an hour with Northern, which buys us about 181 hours. So, you know, anywhere in a 4.5 to 5 week area that we will have the contractors in too. So we'll have both the contractors and our people working through the fall. And then we're certainly continuing to try to hire the third person.
Okay. Questions? Go ahead.
How did it all work out with what salaries you ended up in?
We ended up, the salaries stayed where the union wanted the salaries to be. Mm-hmm. But what we finally did negotiate was a beeper stipend, if you will, so that someone will always be on call. And I think we landed at $350 a week whenever the person has that, because obviously for the entire week they have to be available for us. So they can't really leave the community. They, you know, certainly can't be going to parties. And so it does impact their lives. And each one of the three will have 17 weeks. You know, one will have 18. So it'll be about $5,000 or so. So that gets us up to where we had budgeted for them for salaries. So in the end, everybody was happy enough.
So, Maureen, can you give us that hourly rate again?
Of what they're being paid?
No, the...
Northern, $220.
So was there any consideration given to the fact that if we have two out of three of our crew hired, to hold off on paying that ridiculous per hour charge and just get these guys out there and hope to get the third before we start spending all that money?
Well, I think Commissioner Derubis felt that it will be good for our people to be working with the Northern crew. And so they'll all kind of be working, I think, in the same areas of the city. Not necessarily on the same trees, obviously, but I think he thought that it would really be beneficial. We also have, right now, about 400 trees that are tagged as being trees that we had wanted to have taken down before the winter. We know that if we had brought Northern in for the weeks that we were going to with the 75,000, we were only going to get to a little more than half of those. So hopefully we will get to many more of the 400 than we would have otherwise. So certainly, you know, those trees tend to come down one way or the other.
What is this, your first meeting? Huh?
I forgot I covered.
So it was, Commissioner Drubus thought that it would be better to do this.
All right. But hopefully we don't have to spend all of it paying them $220 an hour.
No, hopefully not.
We get a third person and...
Right. If we get our third person, we will certainly rethink this.
All right, Sal, do you have a question?
Well, I just wondered, have they accepted this, are they experienced men in this field?
I believe they are. I'm not positive, but I believe they are coming from Northern.
Oh, okay.
I know that's what we were pursuing anyway.
Experienced people come in and have to be trained by Northern.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions?
It was worth paying the beeper stipend rather than having an on-call emergency service. Just want to double-check that you ran those numbers.
It was the only way. It took months to get to do this. It was the only way to do it.
Well, it sounds like the stipend was done in order to get them up into the range they needed to be to take the job.
Right. Yes.
That's a way of sort of dealing with the union issue, and from what I gather. Okay. All right, we can make a recommendation. Is there recommended approval?
Yeah.
All right. Alderman Fuller moves approval. All those in favor? All right, that's 3-0.
Did I hear you say she wanted to cut that down to $40,000?
Yeah, I should make that clear. That was the approval, the recommended approval is to reduce the appropriation to $40,000, which is in the letter.
So we're voting on $40,000?
Yes. Okay?
Okay.
All right, let's do 127-12, His Honor the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate the sum of $20,000 from the Newton Marriott Norm Bigger Park maintenance account for the purpose of improvements at Norm Bigger Park for Condition 26 of Special Permit 385-08, approved on February the 17th, 2009, for the Newton Marriott. This item had come to us earlier in the year. We asked for more information as to what the money may be used for. We got a very detailed letter in our packet, which I appreciate, as to possible uses of the money. So, Candace?
Sure, I'll just summarize really quickly what that letter says, and there are two representatives of the Conservation Commission here tonight if you have other detailed questions.
So, who's here from the Conservation?
Jane Sender.
Hi,
and
Jane, how are you?
In the back.
Okay, thank you.
The quick summary is that there are four particular things that are listed in their letter, and the first being improving trails that lead from the Marriott to Norm Vega, although their letter states that they'd like to actually evaluate the potential for various trails and pursue whichever ones are best. There is some erosion in that area on the banks, which we have witnessed, and so shoring up the riverbank would be another way to spend some of that money. Interpretive signs to highlight historic use of the area, relating back to when Norm Vega was more of an amusement park, and then some repairs to the kiosk near Woodbine Road is in need. So the $20,000 would be allocated towards a combination of all of those things, and our planning department conservation staff have reviewed the proposal and think that it's a really good mix of improvements to that area that'll make it usable on a lot of different fronts. I did also have a chance to review this with the mayor, and he also supports the proposal.
So, Candace and also Jane mm-hmm. and Norm, you promised that none of this money will go towards the dog park, correct?
Correct. There's been no dog park authorized for that.
All right. That's all I ask. No money for the dog park, huh? Well, I met Alderman Salvucci's asking who to do the work. I would imagine that the money will be used to hire private contractors to do the work.
Yeah, and the oversight would be...
Well, we're proposing that the path and the bank shoring up will be Eagle Scout project.
Okay.
But there'll be money needed for supplies that they'll need to do. The contractors would have to be found with the kiosk and the memorial.
Okay.
I would also think that we should go through some kind of public process asking people what type of memorial they might want to propose.
That's the one thing that caught my eye.
Mm-hmm.
And, I really hope that you get a chance to do that, because it will make, I mean, it'll make a lot of people happy that remember the totem pole, and so I do hope you get a chance to follow through on that. I think that would be great as a kid, you know, remembering it.
Yeah, it seems a shame that there isn't anything now, and if we wait too much longer, people will forget.
Okay. This is, what's happened with the exhibit that's at the History Museum?
It ended, but I assume they keep hearing.
The reason I ask, and I got a message one time, and I never did end up speaking to the gentleman, but he was asking if there was a possibility of moving the exhibit to, say, the Auburndale Library, and he had one other suggestion, and it seemed like it was, I mean, I don't know if that physically, if it could be done or not, but I thought it might be something worth pursuing.
I think we're talking to the Marriott, too. I mean, maybe they would be interested in it.
Because I'm not sure how big it is, if there's room in the library, but I'll
pretty big.
Okay. All right, for those of you that are late arriving, okay, we're on 127-12, which is the $20,000 for work to be done at Norumbega Park. It was part of the Marriott special permit. All right, any other questions? All right, is there a motion to approve? All right, motion to approve. All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. We've been joined by Alderman Ciccone, Alderman Linsky, and Alderman Laffer. All right, so they're all set. Thank you. Thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's jump back to the top. And 279-12, His Honor the Mayor, appointing Nicholas, is it pronounced Reed?
Yes.
Nicholas Reed, Chief Procurement Officer, effective September the 10th, 2012, pursuant to 3-3 of the City Charter. Maureen, you're going to present?
Thank you, yes. I am very happy to be here introducing you to Nick Reed, our new, or soon to be, hopefully new, Chief Procurement Officer. For those of you who had the opportunity to take a look at his background, what's exciting about Nick is that he brings a completely different skill set to the city than what we have had before. He is an attorney, and he has spent the last 7.5 years of his life working at the Inspector General's office. So he has taught several of the classes that procurement officials throughout the state need to take. He has rendered opinions on several of the different issues. And so this is a completely new skill set for us. And my hope really is that Nick will be able to do work on our purchasing ordinances, our contracts, our language when we are procuring, and that he'll be able to really help people understand why these laws are so important and why we need to follow them. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Nick.
Okay. Maureen asked me to say a little bit about myself.
Yeah, that's what typically we just ask, you know, the person to share a little bit of your background, anything you'd like to let us know about what you might hope to do, and then I'm sure there'll be a few questions.
Okay. As Maureen said, I worked in the Inspector General's office for the last 7.5 years, did a lot of teaching. As a matter of fact, all three people who work in my office knew me already from teaching, so I have a lot of experience in explaining the laws of procurement. Before that, most of my career was spent in financial services. I went to UNC Chapel Hill for college and University of Virginia Law School, and came up to Boston in 1982. I worked for a small firm, banking firm, for 3 years, and then worked for Bank of New England doing for the leasing company, doing commercial leasing and finance leases. And in 1987, I went to work for Boston Safe Deposit and Trust Company in the mortgage and compliance division as an attorney, and was there. It was taken over by Mellon, and was there for 22 years. So, 17 years, excuse me. I've been practiced law altogether for 22 years. And in the Inspector General's office, I taught, as Maureen mentioned, I was also responsible for approving construction management at risk applications, taught prevailing wage, I taught designer selection, supplies and services, didn't do a lot of construction other than that. My feeling about procurement is that it's largely a matter of education. I think if you give a man a fish, it doesn't really help him, or a woman a fish, it doesn't really help them understand why they're doing what they're doing. But if you explain to them, there's a fundamental logic behind the procurement laws, which is that competitive procurement is best and taxpayer money is best utilized by following that process. But I already have had several occasions to explain why the law is what it is and why it's important that we follow it. And I think I sort of see that is sort of, I mean, that's, of course, my educational background coming in, but the Inspector General's mandate was to prevent and detect fraud, waste, and abuse. And to me, prevention is best accomplished by education. I think education is the key to many, many things, but certainly in procurement. And I think once people understand why they're doing it, then it's not going to be sort of an arbitrary, scattershot set of rules that don't make any sense. And I get the feeling, just from what I've seen so far, that that is kind of a bit of a problem, that things seem to have an unconnectedness that I can address. So I guess that's my vision.
So if a procurement officer for a particular city or town, had a question on a certain situation that came up in a procurement law, would they often call your office to get some?
I probably answered about 500 calls a year from individual people. The office itself handled about 2,000 calls a year, and I probably handled more than 500. I handled about 40% of them. So,
okay.
And then, I dealt with Rose and Reed. I dealt with all your procurement officers and people in this office in my 10 years there, and all over the state.
All right, so that obviously sounds like that would be a strength that you would bring to the position. Is there something about the job, say here in Newton, that you may not have as much experience in that it will you'll need to get up to speed on? Or
well, I've never been a chief procurement officer, so I'm coming. My experience with procurement is from the other side, from the educational and enforcement side of it. So, but I have a very good staff that seems to they've managed to get the have the procurement function go for 7 months without it falling apart.
So you're talking about like the logistics of purchase orders and things like something that you'll have to Questions? Steven?
Actually, I don't have a question, but at the appropriate time, I'll move approval. I'll get to the question.
Cheryl?
I was just wondering what made you want to do this after a whole career of different...
Could I tell?
Yeah, I just retired.
I was working on the question came up about the new, about the foundation and the naming rights at the high school, and Dave said, oh, Nick, there's this job you should... that you'd be good for, and so I applied for it in April, and then I guess I got a call that said that you'd gotten it down to a few final applicants, and essentially that I was too late, so that was fine. And then in middle of July I got a call, and I guess it had been reopened, and I guess in all candor, it was not an easy choice to make. I wasn't really looking for a job, and this was kind of like out of my comfort zone in terms of like, well, just what I alluded to. There are many things about this job that I didn't know, but it seemed like it was an opportunity that I might not get again, and it would be good. I could have stayed at the Inspector General's office, I guess. They wanted me to stay, but this just looked like something I'd never done, and I think I could do it, and Maureen thought I could do it, so I guess that was why. It was a new challenge, and at my age, that's kind of an exciting thing to do. My kids have finished school, and I can maybe do something different.
Your boss is retiring, or has retired, hasn't he?
Greg Sullivan retired on August 6th, and the new Glenn Cunha, who's the new Inspector General, came in, and he's just starting. He's been on the job a little over a month.
I shared an office with your previous boss in 1981 in the basement of the State House when I think he was a freshman rep at the time.
Yeah, I think he always said that he got allocated that office because he voted against the party in one of the earliest. He was only like 24 when he got elected.
I never got out of the basement.
No, he didn't.
Stephen.
Well, that was a terrific response to Cheryl's question, but I was wondering too about, you know, why. So, my sense, just as an impression, is that you pick up everything you don't do.
Yeah, we think. Yeah.
I feel very confident. I want to compliment the administration and the search committee for a terrific job, because it's a really important position, I think.
I agree.
And particularly for this committee, so.
Thank you. And if I can just jump in, actually, we had Weta and Dave Wilkinson did their own interview. So Dolores and I interviewed Nick first.
Actually, Karen was first.
Oh, okay. Karen Peniel was first, then Dolores and I. But then I really wanted to make sure that Dave and Weta had confidence in Nick, because it is such an important position. And so I think between all of us, we were really excited, as I say, with the new skill set that we're bringing to the city.
Well, if nothing else, I'm sure there's much. She has a bow tie, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, well.
There's enough there. Right?
I just wore that to impress you.
Well, work.
Yeah. I was just aware when I was teaching, so. Anyway. I also have a master's degree in modern European history.
I saw that from Virginia.
Yeah. I was going to be a history professor.
Well, if the naming rights comes back, hopefully you'll have the same opinion that the public bidding process protects the taxpayer. So that should be interesting, all right? Because that's where the hang-up came. And I'm sure it'll come back.
Well, I've already had a couple issues where I have to be on the other side than I was previously. So it's interesting. But hopefully I'll stay the course on that one.
All right, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Any other questions or discussion? All right, all those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 0. Welcome. Welcome to the city.
And thank you.
Best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Are you ready to take up 205-12?
Yes, we are finally ready to take that up.
All right. 205-12 is honor the mayor. Requesting an amendment to the F.A. Day Middle School Construction Project appropriation schedule included in Board Order 115-12 by reducing the amount of $35,334 from the appropriation for general contractor and adding that sum to the undistributed project budget.
All right, and so I don't know, Shauna, did you hand them out?
What do we have?
You have it right there.
All right, so what I brought tonight is the original board order, and then what we would like to amend the numbers to. The one that has the amended numbers is the one with the gray highlights through three of the line items. And so if I may, what this is we would like to add, I don't know, Sean, if you want to write each of these. So we want to add $768,119 to the general contractor line item. We would like to reduce the sprinkler and related work line item by $803,453, and we would like to add $35,334 to the undistributed project budget. And so just by way of explanation, when the bids came in, $35,334 less than what we had anticipated in the original board order. And so the original request was that we were going to beef up the undistributed reserve by that $35,000. As we had further conversations with the contractor and they realized what our board order looked like, it turned out that the sprinkler system was going to cost substantially less than we had initially anticipated that it would, and the construction piece was actually higher than what we had anticipated. And so that's what those other two changes are. So all in all, the bottom line stays the same, and in the end, we're just really, the most important piece is moving money out of the construction line item and into the board's undistributed reserve.
And what's that going to get us for work?
It is going to get us the science classroom still in there. We are having a conversation, as I think I alluded to last time, about one particular area. Hopefully that will be resolved. We do have one thing that we are not in agreement with the contractor, but we're certainly working to resolve that.
Is this on the build-out of the science lab, or?
No, it has nothing to do with the science lab.
Really?
It's their interpretation of the bid documents and our interpretation of the bid documents and what our unit pricing was supposed to cover, what we thought it was covering, and what they thought it was covering. So we definitely haven't, we're having a conversation with them. We are continuing, we're proceeding forward, though, and we have every confidence it will work itself out.
So the unit pricing in what area?
There were, in the bid itself, we included unit pricings in order to have a handle on what that price might be should there be change orders. That was why we put it in the base bid. It has nothing to do with scope. It has to do with work items that would normally be done. They go everything from removal of the asbestos that's in the building, which we knew and anticipated, to trenching and excavation, to removal of a tank. So that's, and we believe the language of the bid is quite clear as to what the intent was and how the unit pricing was to be handled. We've got a disagreement with the contractor in that narrow area. It does not affect scope.
So it's just that if you need if there's a change order because there's, say, some additional asbestos or whatever, there's, right now at least, there's a difference of opinion of how that would be calculated.
Our opinion is that you'll use the unit pricing, although we reserve the right to question that unit pricing and request lower unit pricing. This is what happened in Newton North. You might remember that when the asbestos was being, when we were demoing the main building, we discovered new items. There was unit pricing in that demo bid, and we actually got into a negotiation with our contractor to, even though there was unit pricing, to revise the unit pricing because the quantities were greater than we anticipated. But it's not uncommon to have a unit pricing out there to address the unknown, and that's what this was to do. It was to address an unknown situation where you get in the ground and you discover you have to do much more excavation than you originally thought because you've got unsuitable subsurface conditions. And we're having a discussion about that. But we should have a very clear sense within the next 2 to 3 months exactly what the scope is, because by the time we hit, I believe, early November, the bulk of the work that we're currently discussing with the contractor will have been concluded in terms of the site work. So far, otherwise, there's nothing else that's going on with the contractor.
So do you think this is primarily site work where this can come up, or is there other?
Yeah, I think it's primarily going to be the site work. I mean, there is asbestos in the contract, but again, we haven't hit that part of it yet. But this is going to set the standard for how we address those unit prices.
So really what it would do is potentially eat up a contingency faster than obviously we would like. Is there any concern that you know, if there is a significant amount that, you know, we could be in trouble as far as eating up the contingency and then some?
I can't really address that. I mean, this is not like we've opened up the ground and we're going to China in terms of subsurface conditions. And we are working to resolve this with the contractor. I do think it's a bigger figure than we had hoped. If you buy what the contractor's saying, we're certainly not going anywhere near what the contractor is asking for right now. But we are working together to see what that resolution is going to look like. But again, I can't quantify it until we complete the site work, which is going to be somewhere early in November.
All right, so maybe I missed. So when you say what the contractor is asking for, so you're saying that we've already run into a problem, and
I'm saying that the contractor is taking a different view on how the removal of certain items that had unit pricing is to be priced for purposes of payment. We're taking the position that those unit pricings were strictly for additions or were for additional work, that there is a basic scope of work that the contractor owns based on the drawings.
Okay.
And the unit pricing was included only if the scope of work shown on the drawings was exceeded. That's where the wrangle is right now. They're taking a position that unit pricing should be done from, you know, the first cubic yard that's out of the ground, and we're taking the position that that's not what the unit pricing says. The architect has agreed with us. We're in, this is, I don't want to call it garden kind of construction, but this is, there's nothing shocking in the dispute that's going on. I don't say dispute, in the conversation that's going on.
All right, but there's only a problem if there are, say, just for lack of a better term, hazardous materials. So have we already found some in the work?
No. This is not hazardous material.
Well, I mean, call it whatever you want, but this, whatever would affect this unit pricing, have we found some of that stuff so that this is kicking in, or are we just worried about if we should find it, how is it going to be costed out?
The unit pricing isn't just on asbestos. That was one
right.
The unit pricing, we got a unit price for trenching, we got a unit price for gravel, we got a unit price for a number of sorts of site work that gets done. And that was in case we wound up having to put a second trench in because the water line wasn't where we anticipated.
All right, so do we have to do that, for instance?
We haven't hit what we see as a change yet.
Okay.
The contractor is taking the position that they want to be paid based on a unit price basis, unit pricing basis, and we're taking the position that you own the scope shown in the drawings, and you only get a unit price if you go beyond the scope that's shown in the drawings.
That's see, now you would think that that's pretty clear, don't
sounds
you?
Sounds clear to me.
All right, but see, it just never turns out that way.
Yeah.
And this is why we're going to do a separate risk for any other project you're involved with, because you have a much clearer handle on that kind of discussion with your contractor, you see at the very beginning. So, again, I think...
you hear that, Sal? You hear what Lita just said?
It's not my decision to make.
No, last meeting he was not happy with the CM at risk process. Lita's saying she will never recommend anything but the CM at risk.
I don't think we had any advantage over with the.
I respectfully disagree, but we can have that conversation with
you. No, we can have another time. Show me where it saved us any money.
All right, I've already asked enough questions. Who, Sal?
Yeah, I see here where it said building improvement, not by GC. Who's doing it? $80,000.
Building improvement, $80,000.
Item 5795.
That's not on the
other page.
It's on this one here, right here.
Yeah, no, I see that too. I am guessing those are other building improvements. I honestly have no idea. It looks like that was added, I'm guessing, to clarify something.
No, it's in both board orders.
Is it?
Yes. It's in the amended one and it's in the original one.
Oh, it's 80 grand.
Building improvements.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is the original one doesn't say not by GC.
Right.
That's, I would assume,
I don't know what it is. Clarification?
Well, I don't know what it means, not by GC, but it's. Why don't we get the answer to that?
Another question: undistributed project budget. What does that mean? Undistributed.
Okay. That is.
Let me explain that one. There is a contingency. Okay.
Which I'm questioning next.
All right. So what we did was, so that we would have again as much control as possible over, you know, the line items, the contingency was broken up into two pieces. The undistributed project budget, which is now $253,399, that is kind of like the Board of Aldermen contingency that we had in the Newton North project. And then the construction issue contingency, in order to deal with things that come up quickly, unexpectedly, so that you don't slow the job down, that's like the mayor's contingency budget. So there is, in total, $353,399 in here for contingencies. All right, broken up into two different line items. Is everybody clear on that? Because that's important for everybody to know.
And we only allow 5% contingency on a construction project.
That's all it is.
Oh, well, you better do the math.
What, seven? a $7 million project.
It may be $7 million after you add all that stuff in, but the general contractor's price is $5,215,000.
You have contingencies for all these other lines. You might need more architectural services. You might need more consultants.
All I can tell you is we have something in place now that says 5% of any construction job, period.
Yeah, and the construction job does consist of these additional line items.
So you're talking about, how much did you say it was, 253 plus?
It's 353.
That's too much money for it.
But just so you know, the construction bid is the combination of the 5.2 million and the 884. So the construction bid.
That's over $6
million. Is $6
million. So it really is just about 5%.
No, it's less than that.
No, it isn't.
No, it's more.
What did you say was 500 plus what?
Plus the Franklin work, the 800,000.
Which we said was reduced. To what?
To 884.
What was it before the...
when we...
A million six.
Right.
It was a million six. So they're saying they can do it for almost half of that, but their construction costs are more. So the actual construction on the building, I would hope you would assume that, or agree that the sprinklers are part of the construction.
Absolutely.
Right, so it's over $6 million. So the contingency...
But why wasn't... I don't know why it was broken down. Why just wasn't it included in the general contractor's price and let it go at that?
What was it?
Sprinkler. It's part of the job.
Well, the reason for it is that we're trying to break these line items out into as much detail as possible so that if there are overruns in a particular area, we know about it. And they have to come back to us and explain, you know, what's going on and why they may need to transfer some funds.
What's the duration of this job?
About a year.
About a year. Clerk of the Works, $125,000 for 1 year. Not bad. I'll take the next job of construction.
Other questions? Yes.
That's Matt.
Go ahead, Ruthann.
Could you clarify... The sprinkler work came in less than anticipated. Was 100% of that extra monies put into outfitting the science rooms, or did some of it go to the additional science room, and then did the general construction number also?
No, what I think happened is the board order was created after the bid documents went out. The contractor didn't submit their bid based on these line items being this way. This is what's taken us so long to come back to you. And so what they did was take their total and calculate which line items ought to be in each line of the board order. But now we'll be held to these, and they will be held to these. So what we had to do was straighten out how their bid lined up with the board order.
And so is that when the unit pricing issue came out?
Totally separate. So their bid was the $6 million odd dollars. And then we had, along the way, had put this board order together. So they then had to figure out what was in each line item. The long and the short of it is, the only thing that we knew in the beginning was that their bid was actually $35,000 less than we had set aside for their bid. That's where the $35,000 comes in.
And going back to the unit pricing issue, is it standard? Who wrote the language in the contract that now seems disputed?
It was a combination of the architect and our office.
All right, Cheryl?
So I think I got some of that. So the sprinkler work came in half price? Or that's not what happened?
No, the bid came in, the whole bid came in $35,000 less.
Right, okay. I'm not fine with that.
And then at least what the contractor The sprinkler, it is, it's much less than we thought the sprinkler work was going to be. What I can't tell you is if we might have had a few components in the contract line item or in the sprinkler line item that the contractor considered in the general construction.
But,
I don't know if that happened.
But Cheryl, I think it's safe, fair to say that, you know, originally you budget things, and I think it's fair to say that we probably, at least the way the bid came in, we overestimated how much it would cost for the sprinkler, and we underestimated how much it cost for the other work on the building. Okay?
But
all things, at the end of the day, it was pretty close because it was $35,000 less. So
right. It's just $800,000, which is a lot of money, so I'm just trying to figure it out. I understand, okay, so the sprinklers cost less. What cost more part of the, do we know?
I don't.
We don't know what was $768,000 more. I'm just curious.
No, because it wasn't, I mean, this is more detail than you usually get as far as line items go, but we didn't break down the actual, you know, construction on the building, you know, the additional classrooms, the demolition, the front that we're going to be doing, the site work. We didn't really break all of that down, so there's no way of knowing, you know, where people may have been off on that.
There's no way of knowing.
It may be useful as we move forward with a lot of elementary schools to
understand that. I mean, that's a significant amount of money. I just would like to know what ended up costing more in for the general contractor.
I think it. My guess is that it was a lack of experience yet with the sprinkler projects. When these numbers were calculated, we now have the three elementary schools done. That came in at fairly decent prices, and those are completed, and now we have this bid. So I think we're getting a sense of what sprinkler.
So we're fine with. So I understand the sprinkler part. I'm just wondering what costs more for construction, because it would be good to know for future projects, and it would be good to know what we underestimated this time.
I don't know.
We didn't necessarily underestimate. I mean, part of it's the market. This is where the bids came in. There were three other bids, and they were even higher than this bid. You know, and a couple of them were substantially higher. So it's also part of it, you know, market driven and stuff. So, I mean, if you have a lot of time on your hands, I suppose you could. I don't know if.
I'm just curious because we went up thinking it was one thing, and then we get the bids, and I'm just wondering, they must have broken it down.
I'm not,
or do they just give us one number?
The way the bids come out, if I might, the way the bids come out, what's broken out are the faster contract trades. You know what those are. Mm-hmm. And then you get a bottom line figure for everything that's not a file subcontractor trade, which is about 20% or more in this instance, because the sprinklers are not file subcontractors, although they will be in the future. They, at the time this was bid, are not file subcontractors. So you really you don't know. Unlike the FEMA at risk job, you don't know exactly where the costs are hidden, because they are. They're hidden. It's just a lump sum figure. You can identify what's part of the file subcontractor trades, because there's a number there next to plumbing. But you can't see anything more in terms of what costs are.
But we did not use, like, in a real big job, like with Newton North, we had a professional estimator, you know, giving us prices all along. I don't think we did that in this job. When we try to put together our original idea of how much it would cost, who did it, Alex?
No, there was an estimator.
There was? On our part in the beginning?
It might have been in the architects. I don't know if it was in
the architects.
There was an estimator, because Alex has mentioned that the fact that it was an independent, but there was an estimation, because we looked at that in terms of identifying some of the prices in connection with the discussion we've got going on right now.
Right.
There was an estimation.
And if I can jump in, what I believe happened is, so the total estimate was for about $6 million. I think the city felt very good with that being the number. I know that the next bid was about 6.3, so we were right, you know, the bidders were in the ballpark. What I would be willing to bet is that when they saw like the categories on the board order, because initially there were even going to be more categories. And then we ended up, I think, settling on this list. And so I would think that people then, you know, put some numbers in here for how much of it was going to be the construction versus the sprinkler. I don't know that we had an estimator that really gave us the breakdown of those. I think our $6 million was...
That's a big difference. I can't understand.
I know it is.
Where did the estimates come from? Did we just pick them up out of the air someplace?
I don't know.
I mean, you know, you go from $1.7 million to $800,000. What did they take out of the job? I mean, you know, you put a sprinkler system in, if you're going to go, do it right, so like 800 and something, whatever it was, a million something, now you're down to 800. What did they eliminate?
They didn't eliminate anything.
Well, if they cut it that much, Lenny, they must have took something out.
It was overestimated in the beginning.
Wow, I'd like to see who the other estimator
was. One of the reasons I'm asking in this detail is because we approved a number initially, right? So, I assumed that we had a reasonable, obviously it's, you know, different down the road, but this just seems a lot different, and we got to be careful with future projects.
Here's the problem, and maybe I'll have to rethink what I ask that we do in the future. We should probably just go back to the old system of, all right, here's the price, $6 million. Don't break it out. And then the bid came in within $35,000, and you're going to think it was great.
We
were perfect.
I don't have a problem with the overall price.
What do you mean not breaking it out?
I think it's important for us to know, you know, if we have a low estimate for something, we should know that because we're going to have other projects, and we should, you know, have that in the back of our mind or in a database or somewhere. That for future, we should, you know, assume the estimate would be higher for a specific thing if we could figure out what it was.
I don't follow.
It's striking that when we approved the budget, actually I don't even know when this was, it's hard to know when this was, that in-house, at least, we thought sprinklers were going to be the $1.6 million. They turned out to be the $880,000. And we expected the general contractor to be the $4.4 million, and in fact, it's $5.2 million. And it's useful for projects going forward, particularly in the building department, to make sure that they're understanding... our estimates obviously were off. It's lovely that it all worked out, but we would like that learning experience to go on.
Well,
wait, actually,
if I can comment,
because that's cheaper, we'd be in the hole for it.
Right.
We wouldn't have done the science rooms. The science room is now concluded.
Right,
but let's pretend that the sprinklers had come in at 1.6, and unfortunately, the general contractor line had come in at 5.2.
No, that wouldn't have happened, because we've got the alternates in here, in front of you now. We have
That's why, actually, my original question was, how much did the science rooms and any other alternates cost that are now embedded in here? Cheryl's question.
We really don't know that for sure. I don't think we broke it out necessarily.
We did. It was 200 or 300, I think.
Which alternate was the science room?
It was one.
There was two of them.
Okay. Number one and two.
Alternate number one was 140,000, and alternate number two is
45,000.
I don't know which one they are.
So almost
200,000. So alternates, we have a pricing on it, so you can tell what the alternate companies cost by.
They also originally came in significantly higher than that, and the city went back to them and banged on them pretty good and got them to reduce it so that we could fit the science lab into the project. Because they came in originally, right?
Yes.
A lot higher than that. The city did a nice job of going back. And who knows if they spread it out somewhere else. So it's not that simple of just, you know, learning you know, what happened, because the next job could be, you know, could be totally different. But there's $200,000 of the money that you're looking for, right, for the science class. Not just the shell, but the build-out, too, because we said, if we're going to do it, we might as well build it out for them. So.
Okay, so it's only
$500,000. So the bottom line is $7,538,396, right?
Yep. And the other bottom line is that it's within what the board approved and included in the scope of the work now is the science lab and the science lab build-out.
And the other part that, to go way back when, remember when we were saying that it was going to be a $5 million project and then we were going to add on the money for the sprinklers? So that's why it's just important to keep understanding why the
scope is different.
Yeah.
The scope is different from when it was a $5 billion project.
Right. But we had hoped it'd be $5 million for the project plus whatever the sprinklers was.
Oh, so that was for the other scope.
Right. So
it's
let's
not
say
the same project.
But it's even the scope only the alternates changed the scope.
No. If I may.
Yeah, remind me. Thank you.
No, we changed the entrance around. Initially, when we were talking, when we were at the lowest point with the projections of costs, I'm not sure if we had four or six classrooms at that point in time. So we have the six classrooms ended up being what we were building, and we've moved the whole front office to the other end of the building, so there's a real entrance on the building, and we've made smaller learning areas over there where they belong. And so the scope of the project changed. So it's not just a matter of saying $5 million plus the sprinklers. We definitely are doing an added scope.
So to get back to your original point, Cheryl, if what I'm hearing Rita say, it sounds like we did get some assistance from the architect in doing the original estimate so that they knew what number to give us to approve initially. So if that's the case, you could probably get somebody to give you a breakdown of those different sub-areas of what was originally estimated and what they came in at, and then you could see, you know, plumbing was estimated to be this and it came in as that. Same thing with electrical, same thing at site work. So
could that be
You can pursue that if you want. That's not
part
something that
the general contractor's price. That's in his price. Because he hires the subs.
So we must have a copy of the estimate.
Oh, I don't know what's in the estimation in terms of breakdown, but I do know it has categories in it because we looked at that estimation for purposes of figuring out what folks thought the site work was going to cost. I would assume it's got categories and otherwise. But again, you do know, even in the general bid, what the file subtrades are costing you, because those are tiered, and those were all file subtrades, and those pricings are known to everybody. What you don't know is all the non-file subtrade work. That's what you don't know.
That's all lumped in. The general lumps all that in together, right?
Yeah.
And if I just may, the only thing that I would caution you on, this has taken 2 months for us to get these numbers. I don't believe that the contractor and the city were looking at the same numbers being in each of these line items. I think in total we got it close and the bids came in close, but for it to ever take us, I've sat here now three different times saying, please hold it, we don't have these numbers yet. So I don't have any idea that we would be comparing apples to apples. That's...
And nobody has a problem with that? We're in generally
what?
Apples to apples? Okay.
Well, again...
Should I talk to you about...
You know, again, what we used to get is basically one line item. This is the cost. And, you know, we decided with the situation at North that we wanted more line items for control, and this is, you know, this is the result. So we'll probably see them again because I, you know, would expect that there'll be some overruns in some of these line items and hopefully some savings in other line items, and they'll be back to us to amend it as they had to with Newton North. But the key thing is that we have that control, and we even have further control within the contingencies. Stephen?
I was just going to say, I appreciate the point you're making about the breakout and how it served the North. I know the point that if we weren't doing that, right, it would all look great because the line, the bottom line isn't really moving.
Right.
So I hear what you're saying. However, since we did put in the controls, and I want to understand a little better, I do agree with Cheryl. Yeah, it makes a difference to know if you're comparing apples to apples. So the only thing, and I understand you did, I remember when you said we didn't have the numbers yet, and now we got them in gross, and I don't fault you for whatever, not knowing why it is on the construction side that somehow that number has changed. When we figure by taking out the alternates and accounting for that, that's changed by about $500,000 to $600,000. Is that right, Cheryl? Something like that. It would be, I think it would be useful, maybe, whatever, just to get at least some sense about what's driving that. Seems to me if we're doing this, we should at least know that if someone says, you know, no one can explain, and I'm not usually worried about why the bidding and the sprinkler was so radically different by a fairly large percent. But that, putting that aside, because that was actually good news, I think, Mr. Chairman, the only reason I would vote just in this vote is just to understand on the other side what pushed some of the costs on the construction side, because it might be useful when we go down the road in other projects maybe to better understand and estimate them. So that would be my point. Maybe we can get there.
So we I know what people are looking for. You want Maureen to see if she can just find, like, in general, the areas of the project that may have come in higher than what was originally.
It looks like once you take the alternates out, there's somewhere in the vicinity of $500,000 to $600,000 that changed.
If we could get the original estimates.
No, we don't. I don't think we need to get to that level of detail, because I don't want to take a lot of their time on doing an exercise that will have absolutely no bearing on the next construction project. I happen to know that. I say that with great certainty. Okay. Because every construction project's different, the market is different, and just because there was an overrun in plumbing on this project doesn't mean that somehow that's going to help you down the road when you're doing your next estimate. That's not the way that it works. I'm sorry. I'm being real honest with you. So if you want to pursue this on your own to maybe get, you, there's going to be, how many file sub-trades are there?
I think there's 15 or 16.
All right, so if you want to pursue that, I don't know how much detail there is, to be honest with you. I don't know what we got from the architect. If you want to pursue it, go through Maureen. She can try and get you what she can, and you can get that information, okay? And then you're going to also get one lump sum for, you know, all this other stuff that the general contractor is responsible for. And that price, I'm sure, will be higher than what they originally estimated. But it's, you know, I'm sorry, it's a waste of time, but you can do it. Go ahead.
But Lenny, wouldn't the project manager or the architect know this right off the top of their head? I mean, we won't have to dig down that much. They should know, right? But someone would.
I'm sure they do know. Right? That must be on a sheet.
She just said that they got 16 or 17 bidders.
But that's only for about 80% of the job, and that does not include the sprinklers. The sprinklers are not a file subtrade at this point. So it's nice that the contractor told you it was $800,000. I don't know what it actually was. Unless you show me a subcontract from the sprinkler company, I don't know what it is.
So he hasn't got a plumber yet to do the job?
Yes, he has a plumber, but he is not a file subcontractor. I don't know if, in fact, what the city received was simply the contractor telling us what the pricing was on the schedule of values, or whether we've actually seen the subcontractor agreement between Colantonio, the general, and his sprinkler company. He had a sprinkler company. He CAM certified, but it was not a price that was put out publicly. Got it? Public.
Just,
I know what a subcontractor is or a subtrade. What does the word file mean in front of that?
In Massachusetts construction law, unlike any other state in the union, you have to, in certain categories of work, break that work out into a separate finite amount of specification, that standard. But you actually then have competition between contractors for that particular piece of work. And then the general has to come in and collect from those people who have submitted file subcontractor trades, somebody to do that particular work. It's not like a private construction job where the general comes in and typically selects the team that's going to do the construction. In this instance, the general can get into a bad marriage with whatever the file subcontractor trade is.
Thank you.
That's a small thing.
My apologies for...
No apology necessary.
When you say a bad marriage, would you please explain?
That's like the South thing.
Because the name of the game is to put in the lowest responsible bid.
And we don't have to take them.
No, the general.
He has to take them.
No, the general, on the file subcontractor level, the general will compile trades, plus then give his scope of work and come up with a price. If that general does not select the lowest available subcontractor from those who have submitted bids, then that general stands at a risk of not having the lowest overall bid, because everybody's selecting from the pool. I don't have to spend time in the committee talking about the games that can get played, but you can find a situation where a general does not like the file subcontractor, take the lowest bid, and the name of the game under 149 is put in a low bid to win the job.
Most of these generals work with the same subcontractors all the time.
There's a finite pool out there, but they'll often restrict against people or restrict.
And they'll tell them, give me your low number.
I don't want to. Nick Reed can tell us all about certain games you get played, but
so
can be bad.
Why don't we leave it like this? Let's give Maureen a chance to talk to the building department. Maybe the building department can summarize the areas in the construction part of the project that came in higher than what was originally anticipated, and get that information to in a memo to people, and if they want information, we can pursue it from there. But just a general sense of maybe what some of the trades that came in higher than expected, which drove it up, and there may be something that we're missing here that somebody from the building department could shed some light on, as you know, to how the numbers ended playing out. So all right, so why don't we do that and see what Maureen comes up with?
Can I ask you, Mr. Chairman, a question? I'm wondering, who's the commissioning agent on this job? Who's going to do that?
I don't know. Who's
do we know who
the company
commissioning? Yeah, has that already been? I mean, that number stayed the same, but has that been bid out already? Or?
I don't know
either.
Commissioning. Which company's doing the commissioning? I don't know if they're
doing it.
Well, they wouldn't have done it now, but I don't know if who's doing it.
I don't know.
It's going to get bigger.
It's too early in the game for that.
I would presume.
Yeah, I would say it
has. I only asked the question because, in the North job, it never ended up getting bid. I just was wondering.
No, it didn't.
Well, it was part of the...
It was granted to our... It was granted to our project manager.
No, it was the project manager.
Yeah, it was the project manager. I know that. But it wasn't good. It was negotiated.
That's another ball game, Steve. You won't see that. They'll come back in for that guy.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions? So all that we're being asked to do is, we're asked to approve the changes in the line items, and it is, we're being asked to approve the board order as is laid out in What is it?
I'm distributed by project.
As in the revised FA Day addition and renovation project budget, which is dated the 24th of September. Okay? Any other questions?
Move it.
Alderman Savulski moves it. All right, all those in favor? 3. Opposed? Abstentions? 3. All right, so it's 303. So Maureen, if you can get something sooner rather than later, you know, so that in case we need to get something else, that would be helpful. Okay. Boy, this one ought to be fun. Just for the record, we have a great contract. We have alternatives that were put in. By the way, the other alternative, which was to do the work on the west entrance, we did not do because it was too expensive, and we wanted to stay within the budget. So the city, I think, did an excellent job of getting a good contract and getting the additional work for the science lab. I'm more concerned about the unit price issue than, you know, how we got to this point, because I think we have a pretty solid contract. So hopefully the unit price issue doesn't end up screwing things up. But I appreciate being made aware of it now, sooner rather than later. So if you can keep us, you know, up to date if anything's happening with that. All right, so 56-07 parens 5 is on to the mayor requesting that board order 56-07 parens 2 be amended by reducing the amount to be used from borrowing by $53,446 and appropriating the $53,446 from the capital stabilization fund for the purpose of closing out the project. All right, so we talked briefly about this last Wednesday. David put together what I hope was a helpful memo as to exactly what we're trying to do here. Remember, the bottom line is that we are trying to save the city interest costs. The quickest way of doing it is to ask the state to hold on to the retainage and to increase to send the state the additional $53,000 so that we have an even swap, and hopefully, we don't know for sure if the state will do that, but that's what we're trying to do so that we can reduce how much we borrowed by, what is it, the $2.7 million total. So go ahead if you want to add something else for me.
I'm fine with that explanation.
Questions?
Just to clarify, Mr.
Yep.
Chairman, as quick as we get this done, this is a time thing, isn't it? The quicker we get this paid up, something in the neighborhood of, what, $46,000 we're talking about, David? Something like that, in interest?
Yes.
I'm over it. I'm over it. I mean, that's crazy.
Waiting,
paying more money.
Well, just if I may, it's a time thing, but it wouldn't have mattered really if we did it in May or now. The payment is due on November 1st, and so that's where the time issue is.
Okay.
And so we will call the state and make sure that we have all of this teed up, if you will, so that it works exactly the way we want, because if we miss actually making this all happen for November 1st, then we end up paying the interest for the year. So we will definitely be on top of this, trying to organize this with the state.
Are we in good shape to do that, Maureen?
I think we are, because if it gets voted on by the board, we'll be calling them this week. We should have that answer for you before you actually vote on this by next Monday. If it passes next Monday, and then we have the 20 days, everything will be lined up for October 20th,
right. Yeah.
And the payment is due on November 1st.
Okay.
So we certainly will be talking to them and trying to get each of the different agencies involved to set this up.
I think the only potential problem, and David, correct me if I'm wrong, is if the state says, no, we need to send you back the retainage and then you can do what you want from that point forward. hopefully they will not require, they won't handle it there. Or if they say, well, we need to complete our final audit of the project before we're going to, you know, send you the retainage or make the application. We're hoping that, they've been auditing it right along, right? And so we're hoping that they aren't going to hold all this up and say that that they want to conduct a final audit. So,
well, why hold this up, though, Mr. Chair? Let's get it moving, because we won't have this opportunity if we just hold on and we can just go by what they're saying.
Did you make a motion?
Yes, I did.
We're doing what we can on our end. Hopefully the state will help us. Any other questions? Okay, is there a motion? So moved. All right, motion to approve. All those in favor? All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-0. 278-12 is on the top of page 2, is on the mayor requesting adoption of Chapter 40, Section 21E of the Massachusetts General Laws authorizing municipalities to set interest rates for any charges or bills.
If I can start this conversation. As you know, we have had, the law department has been working diligently on the collection of our police detail money. There is a statute, actually Chapter 40, Section 21B, which would, if we chose to adopt this, would allow us to have an ordinance that enables the city to collect interest on overdue fees. Property taxes, water and sewer bills, excise tax, none of those are even part of this conversation. Because when people don't pay those, their property, we take a lien on their property. So none of that is even part of the conversation. This is really fees for services. The area where we have the biggest issue right now is in police details and fire watches, where people call us and either need a fire detail or a police detail. What we would like to do now, we also have on your agenda, when you look down at docket number 25712, we have a different request along the way, or the Recodification Committee put this through, that we have certainly some discrepancies between what really is going on with how we have our fees in the ordinances. What we would like to do, at least initially, is have is put on a 14% interest rate charge for late payments for strictly the police details and the fire watch. And then as we work our way through all of the other fees, if this ordinance is approved, the mayor can then institute the fees if we need them for late payments. But we wouldn't do it for everything else at this point in time. It would be prospective, so we would send something out. We generally work with all of the same, or not all of the same, but many of the same contractors for our police details. We would notify them that beginning on such and such a date, any payments that are past due would now be charged interest. So we would look to do it on the police details and fire watches, 14%, and we would do it prospectively. I had Julie take a look today to see who owes us what. Right now, Verizon owes us almost $21,000.
We got a real problem.
N-Grid owes us over $64,000, and N-Star owes us over $80,000. And so just those three companies alone, and that's who we're interested in, owe us $165,000. And so, you know, again, I mean, this is something that we would work with you over time if we find other fees where we feel that the city is really being taken advantage of, that we would look to, you know, to assess interest charges on overdue fees on in other areas if we think we're being taken advantage of.
So this is
not about dog licenses or, you know.
You answered the one question that I had, which was, you know, how do we not get accused of usury charging 14% in this current market, but if it's Verizon?
And N-Star.
You know, feel free.
It's statutory.
Oh, it's statutory?
Yeah.
Can we charge less?
We could charge less. just like they could have taken less.
Right, so that's why I'm no longer...
As a familiar ring to it.
Yeah, I'm no longer concerned then if it's them you're talking. But we there's also private contractors.
Yes. But that's why I say this would be, we would notify all of them. We would send a letter out to our regulars, if you will. And then anytime that anybody calls up for a detail, if there's someone that we haven't worked with in the past, we would just tell them it's a 30-day, we expect payment within 30 days, and we charge interest afterwards. I mean, this is not any different than any of our credit card companies or anybody else that you deal with, that if you're late, as long as you know it up front and you're late, then shame on you.
Hold on a minute. We were also, weren't we looking to pursue prepaying, making people prepay, so we didn't even get into this?
Yes. So
are we still pursuing that?
Yes, absolutely. But that's going to be more the smaller ones that will work that way.
They won't pay the time.
These three won't be paying on a credit card up front.
You can't get them to pay it on time now. You want to prepay.
Well, that was otherwise they don't get the detail.
Maybe.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Maybe you should stand at public facilities, and the next time they come in and ask us for a grant of location, or they say they're not going to move a pole, we point to this because we just keep giving them grants of location.
Yeah, because
we
90%
just keep
of
doing
the,
whatever they want.
Because we hurt a consumer if we
right. Don't. But you know what? But we are not really, it would be them hurting the consumer if they can't do it because they haven't paid us. I mean, we have no leverage. So.
Well, you think that you do it first on the details, as the chairman was saying, why we continue doing it when they haven't paid the past.
We
just really
even up before they get any.
We paid those costs.
It's frustrating.
I'm
okay with this.
Yes.
So we're in debt right there.
Yes.
For the amount of money that we've laid out that we haven't collected.
Exactly. And this is only for police details and
fire. And fire. And then you said other contractors?
For anyone who's looking for a police detail or a fire watch.
I'm okay with it.
Steven?
I'll move it at the appropriate time.
Okay. Ruthann?
I have some questions, which is, if we vote yes on this, and the city goes ahead and adopts Chapter 40, Section 21E, does that mean that the mayor's office and no longer the Board of Aldermen, when a decision is made to expand charging interest for fees to other types of fees? That does, well, that's
no,
what I'm
you
asking.
You don't have to come back.
They
no.
don't, you do
no.
not need to come back to the Board of Aldermen, it appears, and nor do you need to get the Board of Aldermen to approve what interest rate, because you can go up to 14%. That's totally at the mayor's discretion.
That is correct.
So I'd like to understand what fees, in addition to police details and fire watch, would be considered possible to be covered by the adoption of this statute. So what other fees do we currently charge that would
excuse me, does everyone know Julie?
No. Hi, Julie.
So there are some permit fees that sometimes when people go in and do the fire department goes in and does an inspection for somebody, however it works, they bill them after the fact. So there's some permit fees that are outstanding. There are also fire inspection fees that are outstanding. So that could be, for example, one of the ways fire also does details. Those are sometimes lagging and getting paid as well. So those are just some examples that come to mind, but I'm sure there are other charges out there that the city services that may well fit into this realm.
I think I'd like to understand that complete list, because, for example, if I've enrolled my kid in the Parks and Recreation TOTS program, I think of that as a fee. Mm-hmm. And does that potentially, could that be covered? So I think I would respectfully ask that we just hold this till we understand the full range of fees that
would be covered by this, just so we really do understand the latitude that we're giving the mayor. And it may very well be appropriate, but I'd just like to understand it and make sure there aren't some unintended consequences that we just haven't thought through. His fees are every month longer. I'm on the board. I understand how tricky fees are and how sensitive that can be.
How long would it take to put together a list?
If I might.
Go ahead.
The docket item that Maureen noted, the 257-12, was really put together because during recomputation we became acutely aware that there was a discrepancy between what the ordinance said in terms of fees and what was actually happening out in the real world. As a result of that, several months ago, David Olson requested all the departments to give him an updated list of all the fees that they are charging, and he's been compiling that, and now has a multi-page document that shows both what departments are charging versus what's in the ordinance. It is not yet complete, and he's been at this for 3 or 4 months now. I certainly understand Alderman Fuller's point. I'd also suggest that in most instances, you don't get to play the game unless you pay the fee.
Okay.
So I think it's somewhat unusual that the city's in the process of billing anybody.
Maybe that's an important distinction.
Yeah. But I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Right. There may be instances that it happens.
Maureen?
Thank you. Actually, Dave Wilkinson just had a great suggestion, and something that we would be more than to do is if we actually put in the language in the ordinance that it's for police details, fire details, and fire watch.
That's fine.
We would be more than happy
because the sooner we can start applying
exactly,
it to the large utility, the better, I think.
Okay.
So
we'd be more than happy to do that because that's our only intent at the moment. We plan on working with you with all these other fees when we realized that the board, as I think some of you may recall the conversation that we had, the board adopted in its Chapter 40, Section 22F, back in 2002 or 2003, that allowed department heads to set their own fees.
Right.
So not only is the board not involved in whether or not we charge interest, the mayor isn't even necessarily involved in whether or not somebody wants to raise their fee. And so we are going to try to fix that along the way, that we'll be happy to work with you through that. But I think if we put the language in the ordinance for what fees we're talking about, it makes
that
all of us happy.
That was one of those unintended consequences.
Yeah.
All right. That was just my feeling, too. As I sit here and I think about it, we're okay with this administration. But what about three administrations or four administrations down the line? Down the road, and all of a sudden they decide that they're going to start picking and choosing. And that's
all right, so the docket item is being amended to indicate that this request is only for police details.
Right. This is not the ordinance. The ordinance is going to come later.
This is just
the acceptance.
It's not acceptance.
This isn't
the adoption of Chapter 40?
It should be the approval of an ordinance pursuant to a slight variation.
So it's an ordinance.
The docket item that the mayor filed included actual language for the proposal.
Ordinance.
And that's what we're doing there.
And so, and we can amend it the way that we're talking about here. You can do that, and we'll have that prior to the board meeting, obviously, okay? So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about amending the ordinance to make it clear that there's only two areas that we're talking about charging interest in. All right, everybody got that? So if we're going to try and go to a system where, people are going to need to pay up front, why wouldn't we want to make sure the utilities had to do the same thing?
I think, certainly defer to you, Julie, you're the one who's worked on it, but logistically, it doesn't really work that way for them.
I think that what the police have told us is that when they call, they can't just pay in advance. Sometimes it's an emergency situation. Sometimes it's in the middle of the night. If they need to pay in advance, it could potentially cause problems for them where there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. some of the corner, where there's an emergency type of situation and it would be cumbersome for them. They're doing street openings all the time. There's all kinds of issues that they have where they need to be able to get somebody right away. And that's what the police department has told us. So prepayment wouldn't really work for those individual companies.
Right. We also
don't they have to get, first of all, they got to get a permit to open the street. Don't they pay for the permit before they open the street?
Unless it's an emergency situation.
Well, it's either way, they still got to get a permit.
Yeah,
they
again, this has nothing, this really has nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight.
Topic, but National Grid also owes the city a lot of money in unpaid street opening.
Okay. So they didn't get the payment.
So why don't we let them open it?
They didn't get the payment prior to the permit. They were given a permit without payment.
Then I wonder if this language
yes or no.
My understanding is that they owe us money for trench, and they also owe us money for street opening.
I don't understand how they got
that. I don't know how that all works in practice, but I do know that there's a significant amount of money that National Grid owes.
You've got to go to engineering.
I don't know about the other companies. But we are working on that as well. That's something I want to
know. It's your fault and my fault. It's on our watch. These guys aren't even paying for their street opening permits.
That's right.
The other public facilities.
So we need to not grant it unless we have a check then.
Well, I think in the future we need to have that. We need to have that. When they come in, we need to have that discussion that they have to pay for it. That we could, you know, we have conditions on the street openings. We should make it clear in the conditions that one of the conditions is full payment up front.
Yeah.
You should put that right in your language. Can we do that? Should be simple enough.
Engineering can do it, sure.
So we ought to think about that.
The problem, and the
yeah, they get away without paying. I'm sure they're getting away with it, though.
All right. I'm off topic, I realize. Yeah.
Well, no, just to keep on this off topic, though, I wonder if the language is, if we're going to put in, you know, police details and fire watches, et cetera, can we put in trench opening permit fees or whatever the right language is so that we can charge them interest on those, too, if we don't manage to collect it up front for whatever reason. It'd be better to collect it up front, but if that didn't work, can that go in this, too?
We should do
a little research.
I think that that's something that we should be able to address right now in saying that and just put it as a condition of them getting their permit to open it in the first place.
Nice.
You can't open it without paying at least. There's no reason why they shouldn't be paying for their permits up front.
You try to get a permit to cross the sidewalk and do something to see if you can get a permit without paying.
Right. If you try to do something like that and you hired a private contractor to put in a new water line or something, you're going to be paying up front. Mm-hmm. So we should be doing the same thing with them.
Yeah. So do we need to put them in here? Maybe we should. Can we put them in here? Or not?
The trench is state handled by state law. So I would need to research exactly how that works because I'm not sure if the money comes here and then it's a pass-through and it goes to the state or exactly how that works. So that's something that needs a little bit more inquiry. The street opening permits are something that we handle here. There's a fee that we charge every time someone comes in to open the streets.
Steven.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I had originally, moved to approve, and I know ultimately I will. We're standing hold. And I know that...
And I'm not sure I need to anymore.
Okay, but I guess I'm assuming perhaps that the reason why the other item isn't also on our agenda is because you're not quite ready, David, right? You're still collecting the data on the recodification of 257.12, is that right?
Yeah.
But it would make sense, frankly, to do it. Take them up, in the same conversation. We give us certainly a holistic view of exactly what we're doing here in a total way. But I don't know when you anticipate you're going to get the rest of that information.
It's going to be
not much longer. Okay, then I'm comfortable.
I think Luthan was fine once she heard that we were going to limit it to those two areas for now so that we weren't charging interest in all these other fees. So. I think, I don't want to speak for her, but I thought you were okay with that.
Yep.
And that way we can start, we can get, because I didn't do the math, but it's a couple $100,000 or getting close to it with these three big utilities, so we should be able to start collecting interest sooner rather than later. Yes.
Can I ask just a couple more questions?
Do we know what percentage of our, let's call, use police details, are from these large utility companies as opposed to somebody has a party and they need a police detail that night?
Much greater percentage is the utility companies.
But can you give any type of, is it 80%, 20%, is it?
At the end of June.
Yeah, thank you.
One contractor for NSTAR owns 25% of the $500,000 receivable. And that's not NSTAR directly, that's a particular point in time. You have to follow this. And Julie's right. If you were to look at it at any particular point in time, you add up these guys, and then maybe Mass Highway and some of the, but the big clients.
The overdue ones are all these big. I'm just wondering if the big money's with the utilities, but there's a lot of individuals who end up using police details here and there for a wedding or, you know, all these things that happen. And I'm just a little bit nervous about
those. Those are the ones that we want to have pay online.
Can we get, how quickly can we get the prepayment in place so that they're all, these folks aren't getting stuck with the 14%?
Mm-hmm. Well, they won't. First, as long as they pay within 30 days,
right,
they won't.
Yeah.
But the prepayment plan that we were setting up, we had selected up, we were ready to go, and in fact, I was joking at the cluster the other day, Dave can attest to this, that Nick said, well, I'm not sure that you can just select the bank without going out to bid. So I very quickly told him I might be regretting hiring him sooner rather than later. So we're finding that out. We are ready on our end to get it moving.
So it's moving. Great.
Just let me say one more thing. When they open the street, there's two things that have to happen. They have to pay for the permit, and they have to get a bond. You know, if they don't get either one of those two things, they're not going to open the street. So I don't know how they owe us so much money.
I'm not sure that it's being, I don't know, and this is more a question, we may need to get some more information from the engineering department, because I'm not sure how
tomorrow.
It works in the field and how it works in practice, but I'm not sure if they're coming here to get permits in the middle of the night. There's an emergency, the street needs to be open, somebody's house is about to blow up, they're opening up the street, and they're not coming in here and checking with us, and then after the fact we learn about it,
yeah,
maybe
that's
the
that
problem,
may be,
but again,
that may
I
be
don't
the
know.
Case. That may be the case in some of them. But
it sounds like it sounds like it might even be happening with non-emergency situations.
That
but that's to run up the
well,
tally.
We've seen that in public facilities. They come in after the fact for a grant allocation of something that's already been done.
Been done, right.
Yes. Just to give you a heads up, I know this happened in the town that I worked in. The prepay, there was a 10% fee added on top of the details. They cut it to 5, they prepaid.
Nice.
So if that gets publicized and people find out about that, it's more intriguing for them to sit there and go, sure, we can pay right now. Get it out of the way. Just a thought.
All right, so...
I move approval.
So it as amended, which will make it clear in the language that we're only talking about these two areas for right now. Okay? Is there any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor? All right, 6-0. All right, that's all we have for tonight. Please, I don't want the board order, you know, to become a big to-do on the floor of the board. So if you don't get the information that you want initially from Maureen's memo, you know, either let Maureen know directly, or let both of us know, or let me know, and we'll work on getting whatever information people want so that we can get this board order finalized, all right? So we can hopefully not, you know, not have a big discussion on it. Unless people disagree, that's a different story. I don't want there to be a big, long discussion on the full floor of the board because people don't have the information. If you have it and then you disagree with the board order, that's a different story. Okay?
All right, thank you. We're adjourned.
Thank you.